Hi, this is Heather Esposito, and this is Leadership by Design. Welcome to today's episode of Leadership by Design. Today, we're going to flip the tables a little bit. And Jared, I have to say, I'm just a little bit nervous to do this. But today, Jared Majeure, who's a member of our global leadership development team, who used to co-host a sales readiness podcast for Herman Miller, is going to be interviewing me. So we'll see how this goes. I'm excited to try it, but I am a little nervous. So Jared, I'm going to turn it over. The show's yours today.
You're nervous. I'm nervous, Heather.
Okay, we'll see how this works. Let's just be nervous together.
All right, good. It's always good to have a bond with your guest, because you're not my guest. We'll start that way. All right, well, Heather, it is a pleasure to have you on today's podcast. I would like to introduce you, as you do to all the other guests as well, and read a little bit about you so our listeners can take in some of your background. Heather is the Senior Manager of Global Leadership Development for Herman Miller. And in the last 5 years, she has focused much of her work around the neuroscience of quality conversations, growth mindset, and psychological safety, while serving as an internal executive coach and coach trainer for the leaders at Herman Miller. She developed and launched the coaching program, which recently won a gold award from the Chief Learning Officer magazine and a bronze award from Brandon Hall Consulting. She also serves as an advisory board member for the Academy of Brain-Based Leadership. Heather is a professional certified coach with the International Coaching Federation. She's passionate about helping others reach their full potential by unlocking limiting beliefs and mindsets that get in the way. She has spent over 2,500 hours either in coaching conversations with our own employees and leaders or helping our employees and leaders learn the skill of coaching. Heather is an avid learner. She holds 2 bachelor degrees in business administration and accounting from the University of New Orleans and 2 master's degrees. Her master's in special education is from the University of New Orleans, and she has recently completed a master's degree in leadership and human resource development through Louisiana State University during 2020. Outside of work, she is a wife to Addie and mother to Jordan, Maddie, and Amelia. In her spare time, she enjoys reading, doing puzzles, and anything crafty, and is a master of the Candy Crush saga, which I can attest to. Wow, what a bio there, Heather. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jared.
Now, I would love to hear, now that's a very nice formal bio, but I would also love to hear a little bit about you. What's maybe unique that you'd want to point out or special that our listeners should know about you?
I think sometimes when you hear my bio, it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense about how I got to where I am today. I did not start my career or my education with my eye on leadership development or human resources or working with, you know, leaders or in learning. So I, believe it or not, when I started college, I thought I wanted to be a tax accountant, which is why I started in business administration. And somewhere along the way, I realized that that was not really what I wanted to do and took a hard left into education. I worked part-time in an after-school program and loved working with kids, so decided I wanted to go into education. In Louisiana, you could teach as long as you had a bachelor's degree, so I just wrapped up my bachelor's degree in business and then started working on a master's in education. Absolutely loved working with kids. I worked with kids with severe disabilities. And what I learned there is, and I think that's really where this idea of unlocking potential really first started. If you look at a child with disabilities, you can spend a lot of time paying attention to what they can't do. And when you really get to know them and you start to see the ways they communicate that don't look the way that we normally communicate, you start to realize how much more potential is inside each of these kids. And I think that's where that seed was really planted for me. And then after that, I realized you couldn't really survive as a single woman on a teacher's salary, even with a master's degree. And that's when I got into sales and all businesses. It was the cosmetic business with Mary Kay and fell in love with sales. And I think that's also where the teaching component came through, that I learned that in sales, if you were really just there to teach somebody something they didn't know or help them solve a problem that they had, that the product kind of sold itself. And so that was my intro into sales until Hurricane Katrina, which like my whole business was destroyed. Our home was destroyed and we ended up in Atlanta for 10 months. And while I was there is when I got introduced to the contract furniture industry through a mutual friend and started doing some sales support for him out of his home. And when I decided that we were coming back to Louisiana, he asked if I would bring his commercial wall covering to the state of Louisiana. And he had a friend that had just lost their independent sales rep. And so between the two of them, they were kind of able to put a package together for me, if you will. And I told them, I said, I know nothing about this industry. I know nothing about architects and designers. And they said, we can teach you all of that. We believe that you can do it. And so I came and that was my start in the industry. Stayed as an independent rep for about a year and then started working for one of our competitors, stayed with them for 5 years and then was recruited into Herman Miller in sales. And so I've been with Herman Miller for about the last, I just made my 9-year anniversary and I've had kind of a circuitous path here. Started off in sales, moved to what's called sales readiness, which is our learning and development team that's tied to our sales organization. And just over a year ago, was able to bring the work that I was doing in sales over to the larger organization in global talent management. So if you kind of look at it forward facing, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if I look back, I see where each path on my career set me up for success on the next path. But it was not at all the typical educational or job path that you might normally take in human resources to do what I'm doing today.
Great. I never think the path is always so clear and linear, but it's really interesting to hear yours. And what I took away from that is apparently you can do my taxes. That's a new one for me.
I don't know about that.
That's
not my favorite thing. I will share another funny story. Right before Katrina, I was going through a divorce and was trying to decide what I was going to do with my life. And right before Katrina, I had applied to law school. I didn't want to be a tax attorney anymore, but I thought I still wanted to be an attorney. Got into law school, was supposed to start in September. Katrina happened in August. And so that path got severely obliterated. I guess that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing, but funny story. I could be an attorney right now if it wouldn't have been for Katrina.
So you could give tax and legal advice is what I'm hearing you say too.
Well, if you want to not necessarily make sure you're getting the best advice, then the answer to that is
okay,
yes.
Okay. That's great. That's great. Well, I love hearing that story and it really helps the listeners better understand you, Heather. And I thought I could ask you a little bit more about some of the work that the team is doing around leadership development. But first, I wanted to ask, what does make you so passionate about leadership?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the thing that makes me so passionate about leadership is that I believe that leaders have the greatest influence in the organization. They touch every single employee. Every employee works for a leader. So they're the one avenue we have to reach every employee directly. That's one thing. They play an important role in being a conduit between the purpose, the vision, the mission of the organization and the team. So they are the conduit to bring that down to the individual level. And then the thing that really makes me passionate about that is I've had leaders that have changed my life. And so I know that a leader's role in someone's life can be transformational. And I don't take that lightly at all. I am eternally grateful for some leaders who have poured into me and believed in me when I didn't believe in myself, and saw something in me that allowed me to grow and develop. And I want every employee to have a leader like that. So it's easy for me to get up every morning and wanting to help our leaders be that kind of person for every employee in the organization.
Yeah, that's an incredible motivation and passion to have around how leaders in your life helped shape you, and now you have the opportunity to help others do the same for the employees here at Herman Miller. So it's pretty incredible the opportunity you have here. And speaking of Herman Miller, and I guess maybe Miller Knoll is maybe a better use of the word at this point, but thinking about where our organization is and kind of where we're going right now, it seems like leadership development does have a different approach than I did even when I started. I started at Herman Miller in 2014. I didn't start as a leader, but I certainly worked with many leaders, and hearing what the work your team is doing now seems to be different than what I remember the leaders that at that time were doing. So I would love if you could describe a little bit about what that approach is and what is your team doing right now, I guess, in service of that approach.
Well, it is our team. You're a member of that team as well. And
Heather, I'm trying to play the role correctly.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yes. Okay. So the Global Leadership Development Team is relatively new for the organization. We've had employees, we've had talent management consultants that have worked on leadership programs. So I would say this more strategic focus on the importance of leadership is something new. And like most organizations, many organizations take organizations call it a university, some call it, leadership training programs. It's been a much more program-focused, skill-based approach to leadership development. So what are the things that a leader needs to know? What are the things that they need to be able to do? And getting into some of the mindsets behind that, but it was heavily reliant on a program. And so as we move forward, some of the things that I think you may notice that are different is, first of all, I would say that it's this idea that development is in service of something we're trying to accomplish in the business. And by that, I mean, I'm not a fan of just development for development's sake, so that we can say, did you take that program yet? Have you completed that? Have you done this training? I'm not a fan of that. It should be, here's what, as a leader, we're trying to accomplish. Here's what the business is asking of us. And so what do I need to do differently as a leader? And what do I need to get better at to make that possible? So my development is really unique to me and what I personally need to get better at to accomplish what the business is asking of me. And so I think that's one big shift, so that development looks very individualized based upon each leader. And I would say another big difference is this idea of trying to bring in kind of the scientific term is adult development theory, but there's research out there that shows as adults continue through their path of development, just like we have stages of child development, there have been determined that there are stages of adult development. And as you progressively move through those stages of adult development, you're able to handle more complexity. You're able to think more systematically. And so we're bringing in some of that theory into how we approach leadership development, so that not only are we helping you with the skills you need related to the business, but it's helping you through the path that hopefully we're all continuing to take as adults, and to stop looking at the adult stage as the end of development, but it's only the beginning of a series of new stages that we can go through. The other big thing that I would say is somewhat different is this idea of technical approaches versus adaptive approaches. And by that, I mean, certain challenges that we face can be solved with technical solutions. If I need to learn how to use features in Excel, I can go take a class to do that, that helps me work more efficiently, that helps me build more robust tools to use in my job. But many of the things that we face are going to require me to change in some way. And that's what's called an adaptive challenge. And if we have adaptive challenges, you can't solve those with technical solutions. I'll give you a great example that everybody can relate to. It's this idea of giving feedback. You know, it's a challenge around the world to be able to give and receive feedback well. And so I could take that challenge and put a technical solution on it and say, great, we're all going to take this feedback course. We're going to teach you how to do it, what to say, what not to say. And so if you've taken this course, you'll now be able to give and receive feedback well. That's a technical solution. What we discover is I can skill you all day long on that. And unless something changes in either a mindset you hold or a belief that you hold about feedback could be mean, or it could hurt someone's feelings, or I get defensive when I receive feedback. If I don't work on that mindset and that belief, you're never going to change the outer behavior, no matter how much I skill you on that. And that requires an adaptive solution. And so we are doing much more work at the mindset level than we have before. And then finally, I think the last big thing is that development doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like it's great that I'm working on my own development. It's great that you're working on your own development, but it can become so much more powerful if we're talking about that and working on it together. And so if you're aware of the things I'm trying to get better at, you can be a good encourager to me. You can hold me accountable to that, and vice versa. If I'm aware of what you're working on, I can provide as your leader opportunities to put you in that space to have more reps, have more at-bats at getting that experience, and also give you more targeted feedback because I know that's the thing that you're working on. So I would say those are the four big things to me that are different in how we're approaching leadership development now. And I would say is more a 21st century approach to leadership development. That was a lot, sorry.
It's a lot, but there's so much to unpack there. So much rich content to think through. I mean, as you were describing some of those, I was imagining the leaders in my life, and yes, you are my direct leader. But the leaders in my life certainly have been able to do many of those things for me. And I especially remember leaders in my life who have been open with what they are working on. And it's a very vulnerable moment. It's always, and I'm sure it's as much pressure for that leader to do it, but it's hard to put words to what I'm trying to say, but what I'm trying to describe is the feeling it is for the recipient to be on the receiving end of when a leader does this, because it's like, I don't know, it's seeing a pig fly, because you just don't see leaders often open up about something that they're trying to work through with no ask in the end. And I remember, Heather, you did that for our team, and it was a really interesting experience because you're very open about what you were working on. And I fully expected then to be asked, okay, what are you working on? And it was, no, you don't, I'm the one being vulnerable. I'm the one being authentic here. I'm sharing with you what it is for me. And so that was a really, I'll say, touching moment for an employee like me to see that as a leader. I'm like, well, don't you want something to return? And it was, no, this is for me. And if you ever want to share what you're working on, that's great. But I'm not going to force you to do that here because this is something that I want to show and lead by example.
I mean, I'd love to say that I've got it all figured out and I have all the answers. And yeah, I just want to be perfect and not let you see, underneath my armor. I'd love to be able to say that, but that is a huge trap for me as a leader. Number one, it's a standard I can't ever live up to because I'm not perfect and I am going to make mistakes. And there are things that I still need to get better at. So that would be a trap, number one. And number two, the other thing is it limits me. If I can't ever be vulnerable with you and tell you what I'm working on, then what does that model for you that it's not safe it's not safe to have things that you're working on. And it will set me up to where I won't try the things that would really maybe advance us or be innovative, because if I try that and I look stupid, then you'll think less of me. So it's a huge trap to get caught into. And I agree that I don't care whether you're a leader or an employee, if you're caught up in the trap of always having to look good, you're going to spend so much more of your effort just trying to manage that impression than being creative, being innovative, trying new things. And that's a shame.
Well, not to mention
a lot of effort.
Yeah. And if you're spending the effort focused on the how you come across or how it's being received, that's energy that you're not using for other things that are more productive potentially and could get the team to a better spot and remove the roadblocks from us as well.
Absolutely.
It's interesting to think about how you're spending that energy when you're thinking about developing your leadership. One thing that I'm curious that you said earlier too was this how development is individualized, at least that's my interpretation of what you said, that there is no set program for leaders at Herman Miller. So I would be curious, putting on the spot, but can you give an example of maybe how that would look? Say I'm a leader and I come to you and say, hey, Heather, I want to grow my leadership skills. What would be your response?
The first question I would ask you is, what are you trying to accomplish right now? Mm-hmm. What is the business asking of you? What are you asking of yourself? What do you want to do in your function, in your team, in your chart of work? And then we would start talking about what would need to shift in your leadership to make that possible. There isn't one answer. Now, I do want to be clear, that doesn't mean that Herman Miller will never offer a program. We offer lots of programs. Our Coaching for Leaders program is one of those, because we believe that coaching is a fundamental skill. And we can't ask you to be a great coach to your team without helping you learn the skill of how to do that. But it doesn't mean that every leader needs to take the coaching program tomorrow if that's not the thing that will serve their development best today.
Well, and so, I think about that program too, Heather, with Coaching for Leaders, because in that program, one of the first things that we ask the leaders who are part of the cohort is, what is your vision? What is it that you're trying to get out of this? And it's always pretty amazing to hear, and I think probably for the other leaders as well in the room, well, virtual room, to see and hear what everyone else is, what brought them there. And you often find different answers. It's not the same answers, which goes to prove the point. How important it is to make sure that it is individualized.
Yeah. So even within the context of a program, it's what's going on in your life, in your team, in your function that you want coaching to be able to serve or help you get better at. Do you want to be better at having tough conversations? Do you want to be better at not giving advice and bringing out best thinking from your team? Do you want to just have better conversations with your team? I mean, there's a lot of different outcomes that can come for each leader from the same program based upon their vision for where they want to be as a leader and how they want to grow.
Now, Heather, if leadership development is so individualized, what is the opportunity then for collective leadership?
Yeah, so it's the other side of the coin. Like, I have the things that I'm working to get better at. And there's two ways to look at this. So I can share it with my team and say, hey, here's what I'm working at. If you catch me doing this, this, and this, I want you to point it out to me. Because sometimes the things that we're working on, like opportunities, sometimes are invisible to us, or when we get out of sync or we get out of balance, it's easy for us to be blind to it because often these are default patterns of behavior we're trying to change. So I can use my team to point out opportunities. If I am somebody that's working on speaking up more or speaking up earlier in meetings, And you catch me being really quiet. I can ask my team, you know, please make sure to ask me what my opinion is, so I'll remember to speak up early and often. That's a way that my team can help me in my goal of getting better. So that's one way collective development happens. The other thing that some of the research suggests is that, and it sounds awful, but it's true, is that when we come together, we can come together in ways that actually are lower than our average. So our average intelligence or our average effectiveness, because of team dynamics, we actually can work below the average of what we all bring to the table. And that's because that whole thing we were talking about with managing impressions. Oh, what's somebody going to think about me if I throw out this crazy idea? Or what if I throw out that idea and it like takes more work than what I anticipated? And so the idea of collective development is also, how do we get better at the thing that holds us back as a team? So if I say, you know, as a team, we want to get better at taking more risks or being more progressive with our ideas. And the thing that holds us back is we're not really honest with each other as a group. We decide that like we don't really speak our minds or speak up with each other. Then as a group, that's something that we have to get better at and we have to address collectively. It can't just happen for the individual, because even if I agree to speak up, if somebody else in the group responds and reacts in a way that makes that not okay or not psychologically safe, then I'm not going to continue to exhibit that behavior. So there's this idea of what do we as a team have to work at getting better at, and how are we as a team doing that? So there's two ways to look at collective development: the support and accountability piece, and also team dynamics and group dynamics can negatively impact what we're trying to achieve. And to get better at it, the whole team has to work at getting better at it as a team.
Heather, speaking about that second point about the team, one of the resources I know that our team has been focused on for a while, but also making it easier and more accessible to other leaders within the organization, is this team agreements and in a forum to say, what are our agreements and what are we going to do here? Could you speak a little bit to the team agreements and what you've found from leaders who have incorporated that sort of practice?
Well, I think it goes back to making the implicit explicit. I mean, we can say that like, oh, well, I expect people to speak up, or I expect people to be honest, or I expect people to attend our team get-togethers or whatever. I mean, you can have agreements about a lot of things. You can have agreements about the technology tools you use. You can have agreements about, especially with our globally dispersed teams, what are our core working hours? You know, I have people on that work with the leadership development team all the way from the West Coast to the UK. And so the hours that fit for everyone where it's, you know, still in their core working hours tends to be like that 9 to 11, 12 range gets everybody in. And so those are core hours that we agree to set aside so that we can be available for team-based meetings, because we have such a small window in the day without people either having to work late or get up early. And so agreements like that are really important. But then it also gets into some of the more subtle things about how do you like to receive feedback? How do you like to be acknowledged? How do you like to be communicated to? Do you like to receive text messages, or do you never want a text message about work on your phone? Do you like to use Teams chats, or would you rather have an email? And so you start to develop these, you can call them norms, you can call them agreements about how we're going to show up with and for each other. And then also really important is, what are we going to do if those agreements are violated or not honored? And that's really important to do at the outset, because once you've already had a problem or a challenge, then it seems more conflict laden Whereas if those are decided up front, it's just like, no, this is what we said we were going to do and how we would address it if the team agreements were not honored. So we're just doing what we all agreed to. It's not personal. And the leaders that I have seen that have done this well, some of them in subtle and more informal ways, some of them in very formal ways, is the team function is just so much higher because they have they've just talked about it. So everybody's aware, everybody's on board. There was nothing left to chance because the discussion had been had. And I think that's the thing, is just really making some of those things that we assume or that may be implicitly understood are explicitly discussed.
And I think about the example of how on our team, one of us, not naming names, maybe it was me, was wanting to know what the rest of the team was working on and felt like, could there be a forum where we do hear from each other? Because there could be some opportunities to learn from each other, but also participate, but also just from my own need for trust from a psychological safety standpoint. Like, I want to know what my team's up to. I'm a remote employee. I live in Southern California. I don't get to go to an office every day. I don't have access to an office every day. So having those moments to check in, and I remember asking the team, would we be open to every Monday just posting what are the top five things that you're going to be focused on this week? And we've now gotten the habit of we put it in Teams and we talk about it for 30 minutes on Mondays. And well, to some that might look like just an extra meeting. To me, it is a really valuable connection point and something that I look forward to. And I always take something new out of that discussion that I can apply to the other five things that I came up with throughout the work. But again, that came because of a team agreement that we set. Every Monday, let's put our five things in and let's talk about it. Sometimes it's short, sometimes it's long, but I do remember how that was so valuable to me.
Yeah, and I think it's not being afraid to speak up if there's something that is important to you. It doesn't mean we always do all of them, but everybody on the team said, yeah, that actually would be helpful to me too. And I'm willing to sign up and be part of that. So everybody kind of put their all hands in and agreed to do it. And I think as we move to learning how to work hybrid, Jared, we have an almost fully remote team. So we probably will be more intentional about trying to do some of those touch-based things because we won't be in the office together. But I think this is the opportunity for lots of teams, even those that do go into the office, to get creative about how they're creating connecting points, trying things, seeing what works for the team. Other teams may say that's stupid. I don't really mm-hmm. care. But for our team, it is important, and it has helped each other learn and be able to find synergies that might have been overlooked. So,
and something I'm curious about with you, Heather, when you think about all this work and you can hear the passion every episode you tune into on this podcast for sure. But I want to go even further to ask you, when you think about your journey and your development, and I hope you're feeling brave today, safe space, but like what are you working on that you would feel comfortable sharing with everybody when it comes to your leadership?
I'm glad you asked me this question because it does require a little courage. And I love how Brené Brown describes courage. Is courage is not the absence of fear. It's the feeling of fear and still doing it anyway. And that is one of the things that I would really like to see our organization develop, is the willingness to be more like one of the authors that I like to read, he calls it deliberately developmental. So if we can all just start talking about the thing we're working and getting better at, it normalizes that. Now I'm not the odd duck out being really brave and courageous because I'm on a podcast telling you where my developmental areas are. It's like, hey, that's what I'm working on. And if somebody else hears that and says, great, like, hey, I'm working on that too. Can we share some ideas? Or can we be accountability partners? How can I support you? If we can normalize that everybody has their thing that they're getting better at and they're working on developing, I think we'd like be able to exceed leaps and bounds, because we're all stretching to get better so that we can accomplish something amazing for the business. So I'm not trying to deflect from your question.
Yeah, but like, hey, where's the answer?
What is the answer? Yeah. So a couple of things that I'm working on getting better at. Well, first of all, this is just an ongoing journey. And that's just, I'm trying to think of a way to describe it it's not the neuroscience term, but the neuroscience term for it is kind of self-emotional regulation. So I'm going through change just like everybody else in this organization is going through change. And I don't just mean because of the integration work with Noel, but we're learning how to work hybrid. I'm living in an area where COVID still has a really strong presence. And so there are things that are changing in my world from day to day that I have to navigate. So I kind of work on my own stress management. That would be a great way to describe it. And the way that I do that is, first of all, getting really self-aware of why any trigger is bothering me. Like, really, what is this about for me? Is this about me not having enough information? Lately, with some of the challenges with COVID down here, it definitely challenges my need for autonomy. I don't like having choice and control taken away from me. And I feel like, you know, in order to be healthy and safe, that my choices are limited. So I spend some time really trying to figure out, not that I'm just angry about something or that I'm stressed or frustrated about something, but what is it about that that's really frustrating to me? Because once I've identified that, it's a lot easier for me to choose what I want to do. And I've developed a practice based upon some work that the Academy of Brain-Based Leadership has done about how to reframe that. And so there's the one that I tend to use the most is, and it's probably not surprising since I value development so much, is what's the personal growth opportunity for you, Heather? And it's like, okay, it's just a way for me to get myself out of the stress side of it and more into the reward side of it. And no matter what it is I'm facing, it's like, is this an opportunity for me to develop more patience? Is this an opportunity for me to get projects done around the house? Is this an opportunity for me to go learn something new? So I try and figure out what the personal growth opportunity is in every challenge, or I try and figure out how I can kind of get that need met. So for example, if I'm feeling like I have no choice or control, like my autonomy is being a little threatened, then it's like, okay, so what do you have choice and control over? And it's like, well, I have choice and control over how I react to it. I have choice and control over how I choose to spend my time and who I choose to spend it with. And it sounds so silly, but it is really a way for me to not focus on the negative or the emotional side of it, but to become more proactive, which keeps me in a much better headspace. So I've spent lots of time lately just working on that as kind of my own personal change management strategy. And then, oh man, do I have to talk about the thing that I'm really working to get better at?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So two things. I've been taking myself through an exercise that actually part of it was some feedback that I received from you around the level of drive I have in my work and the amount that I seem to work. So I'm trying to model better balance and working on that. And the other thing that I'm working on is, even though like I am so passionate about working with other people, I discovered through some coaching actually that my daily schedule, I completely give to others. So like I'll schedule meetings to serve others from 8 to 5, and then which also plays into this other goal, which then leaves late at night or on the weekend for me to get my personal work done, whether it's just something as simple as returning an email or some heads down work that I need to do. Even when I try and block time during the day, if somebody else said, hey, can you talk to me for 30 minutes or an hour? I would easily give up that time to be of service to others. And I realized that that wasn't serving me very well. So I'm trying to do better with protecting my time and realizing that when I do that, it actually does help me continue to be in better service to others. It just looks a little different, but there's some pretty strong beliefs and assumptions that run behind that for me, and some pretty strong messaging that I grew up with around hard work, always being productive. Like, didn't have a lot of time. Like, as a young adult, or as a teenager, I had very young siblings, so I didn't have a chance to really still be childlike at that age. I helped out a lot with my siblings, and I don't regret that. But I also, it is very hard for me just to play or just to do something that isn't productive. And so I'm working on that a little bit. So,
well, I appreciate you sharing that. So, I mean, quite seriously, thank you for sharing that. That's, I can imagine how tough that must be to have to face that, but then also to share it out loud and then share it to people who may not see you. And I have the opportunity right now to look at you while we're doing this virtually. And I can just only imagine what it must feel like to do it. So just know that it means a lot to all of us to be able to be part of it and hear that. And it kind of makes us think the same, like, perhaps am I doing something like that? Or where can I take what she's learning and apply it to what I'm doing here. So your bravery here does help us. And I'm not saying that because you are my leader, it's the very truth. Just to see that really is motivating for us. So thank you.
I appreciate that. It'd be much easier to just go get another degree right now and just put myself in learning mode to take on a technical solution. Just go learn something new than it is to do this kind of development work, because I have to get underneath some beliefs and some assumptions that I hold that run pretty deep for me that are like putting on brakes to the goals I want to achieve. And so I kind of wonder why I sometimes don't get to the things that I want as quickly as I'd like to. And I start looking at it and it's like, okay, well, here are the ways that you sabotage yourself without even realizing it. So
it's just so interesting.
Harder work.
And to think about leadership development not being, when I originally thought about leadership development, I thought it was the, here's a weekend away for $500 at this retreat, and you'll come back as a whole different leader and your life will be changed forever. And please know, I'm not minimizing the experiences of those things, because I think some of those can do that for many. But to speak to the adaptive, it's a journey. It can start at one of these retreats, if you will, but it is so much bigger, and there's nuances and there's complexity. And you even shared how coaching helped you get to some of those discoveries. Are there other areas that you see leaders discover, as you put it, the thing that's kind of behind the scenes, the thing that's the stories that are being told? Are there other areas where leaders discover that?
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, coaching for sure is one of the easiest ones. And we have a great peer coaching program now where any employee in our organization can have access to a coach that's either working on their credential or already has their credential, but has extensive training. So if you have not looked into that, I highly advise it. I don't care what you're trying to think through or what you're trying to accomplish. Working with a coach is amazing because they can ask you questions that help you think about things in ways that you haven't. But for some of our leaders, I think another great tool that we have is to use a 360 assessment. It allows you to get credible, validated feedback from different parts of your life. And we started this conversation talking about managing impressions, but it is interesting to look through the lens of a 360, and you can see, am I showing up differently with my direct reports than I am with my peers, than I am with my leader, even my leader's leader? If you're seeing a lot of disparity in those scores, it could be an indication that you're spending quite a bit of time managing impressions. It also can mean a lot of other things, but to be able to see qualitative feedback be converted into data that can start to help you find patterns or make meaning of the data that you're seeing is a really powerful way to enter into some deeper coaching conversations. So I think that that's a tool that's been really helpful. And our new leadership principles and practices are really designed to do that as well. So as that leadership model was developed, it is a set of expectations and behaviors that we believe great leaders exhibit. But if it's a good model, it means that it should also be applicable to every situation. So I don't care whether you're working on how to manage working hybrid. I don't care if you're trying to take on a new business challenge or trying to be innovative. That leadership model is also the lens through which you approach your leadership. So I'll give you an example. If I'm a leader of a team that is moving to working hybrid, how do I as a leader need to inspire impact? How do I need to create clarity differently? How do I need to define success and track our progress differently? As I'm not going to see you in the office. I don't know. I really don't know, Jared. I don't know what time you get up. I don't know what time you go to bed. I don't know when you're on your computer and when you're not. So we talk a lot about the outcomes that we need to accomplish and the deadlines by which we need to accomplish it. If you want to work on it at 3 a.m, if you want to work on it from 8 to 5, I can't use presenteeism to do that. So I have to think about how, as a leader, I'm going to define success and measure progress potentially differently. And then, of course, each leadership principle has a coaching practice. So how do I coach to personal accountability? I really do not want to have to send you messages saying, hey, are we on track for this? Is this going to get done? Did you get this done? I didn't. I want you to feel personally accountable for your own work. And there are things as a leader I can do to ensure you're set up for success. But I really don't. I'm not a micromanager. I don't want to be a micromanager. And I really don't want another job trying to make sure you're doing your job. So that lens for me is how I actually start to think about myself and what I need to do differently to accomplish that business challenge. We're looking now at, as leaders, leadership development, how do we help our new leaders from Knoll, acclimate to our organization? What do we need to do differently as a leadership development team to support them and to support our own leaders through this integration journey? And so again, I'll turn back to the leadership principles and practices, probably in the cultivate connection. How do we mobilize around shared purpose? What do I need to do there? What do I need to do to build trust and belonging? How does that look different today than it did yesterday? And what would it look like to coach to synergy? And so that framework is my benchmark of what I'm working towards, but it's also the lens through which I tackle any business challenge. And so that's why I believe it's such a valuable model.
Thanks for sharing. Well, Heather, if you are ready for it, we'd love to dive into some questions that I know that you ask many of your guests and get different answers each time. So now I get to turn it on you. I want to know what your answers would be for some of these questions. I know you just spoke about some of the principles and practices. You were relating those to current business challenges and the climate. But as a whole, what would you say your favorite, your favorite leadership principle, and then maybe your later favorite leadership practice from the LPP?
Let's see. My favorite one is easy, and that's choose stretch over status quo. And my previous leader, many in the organization may know her, PJ Anderson, she was the one that introduced me to this idea really intentionally. And back when we did annual reviews, at the end of every annual review, it was, how do you want to stretch yourself this year? And I don't know how others on the team interpreted that question, but I really took it seriously. I couldn't just punt on an answer to that. I had to have something that really felt like it was a stretch and something that I thought would help our team do something better, accomplish something, try something new. And so I really pushed myself with that. And it is the result of that question, the things that I said I wanted to do to stretch myself, that have totally put me in the position to do what I am and what I'm doing today. One year it was to go to coaching school. One year it was to get my psychological safety certification. One year, I can't even remember, but everything that I put in that stretch goal are the places that I grew the most, that is kind of like what I'm known for at Herman Miller today. So I'm eternally grateful for that one. And I really believe, again, getting into that idea of development, we should all be stretching ourselves. The business is asking more of us. The world is asking more of us. It's getting more complex. It's getting faster paced. So if we're not growing and developing, we're not standing still. We're falling behind. So how can we each hold ourselves in that growth stretch developmental space is really important to me. It's my favorite.
Well, and I have to respond to that one too, Heather, because I also had the opportunity to report to PJ, and kind of a funny story on that one with the stretch when she asked me that question too. And this was our first conversation with she as my leader. And she asked me that question about how do you want to stretch yourself? And I told her, I said, PJ, I've been thinking about this quite a bit. I think I want to go for my master's. I think I want to pursue it and get that as soon as I can. And she said, great. What do you plan to do with it? And she asked a couple of follow-up questions about where's your goal with it? What is it in service of? And I remember looking at her going, well, doesn't Herman Miller just want me to get my master's? And she kind of looked at me and she goes, Jared, when I asked you, how do you want to stretch yourself? I didn't ask you how Herman Miller wants to stretch you. I asked, how do you want to stretch yourself? And I remember that. And then so I said, can I have a rain check on the answer and come back to you? And sure enough, she was like, yeah, I just kind of laughed. And a week later, I came back to her with this whole concept, this safety that I know that you had gone through the year before. And I said, it fascinates me. I love this neuroscience stuff. I really think it can help me in my development. And that, and sure enough, it was supported. And we talked through the logistics, of course, that we had to, but again, it was, how do I want to stretch myself in service of where I want to go, as opposed to what I think, based on whatever standards I had in place beforehand.
Yeah. Another funny story with that. Like, this was more recently. So like, I think the last time we went through this exercise, I kept trying to come up with things and I'm like, but that's not a stretch. Like, I know I can do that already. That's not a stretch. And so I had to come to the conversation. I didn't have anything. And I said, like, here are the things I've been thinking about, but they're not stretches for me. Like, I know that I can accomplish them. They're just kind of like goals, I guess. It's a goal that I want to do, but it's not going to stretch me. It's just something I want to get done. And so I'm telling you, I really took that question seriously and was really struggling 1 year to come up with something that I felt would really stretch me, even though the others were good and lofty and worthy goals, but I knew that I could do them. And so if I was honest, I wasn't going to be stretched by it.
Yeah.
And so I hear you. She ruined us in that regard. And I know she listens to this podcast, so she'll get a good chuckle out of that.
That's good. Now, Heather, when you think about one of these principles or one of the practices, what one do you think, when you think about maybe your growth, and you shared a lot already here, but which one aligns possibly the closest, or maybe the one that resonates the most, maybe the biggest opportunity for you when you think about the different practices and principles, when you think about your growth?
I would say that one's probably pretty easy too. And I would say it's create clarity. And one of the reasons I say that is I can be really comfortable in ambiguity. And if you know the safety model that we use for psychological safety, my security score is fairly low. In fact, I actually like it when I get thrown an unexpected challenge. It's like, yes, okay, get something really exciting to dig into, figure it out. And so I realize that personally, I may not need as much clarity as others. And so it is easy for me as a leader to take for granted that everybody on my team is comfortable with the same level of ambiguity or the same lack of information. And so I have to be really intentional about what the expectations are, finding out from others if they have all the information they need, and not just take for granted, sometimes even my own knowledge base, like things that I've read about or things that I think about that others are thinking about. So That one I really have to be intentional about, because I would give you less information than I give you if it was just based upon using myself as the litmus test.
Well, and someone who's probably not as low in security as you are, I definitely am appreciative of you spending some time here. Love knowing what I can know when it can be shared.
Yeah, it's something I have to think about a lot.
I appreciate it. Well, looking at the time, it might be good to get some rapid fire questions. Are you ready for the rapid fire?
I am, but can I ask you one question that I've been thinking about a couple times? Can I flip the table back for a minute?
Do it.
Okay. So we were talking about the thing that I wanted to grow and develop and get better at. And part of it was feedback that I had asked you for. And so from an employee's perspective, what was it like to have your leader ask you specifically to say, I want you to tell me one thing I can get better at that would help our team?
Oh, how do I make this answer not too long? Yes, that was, I kind of mentioned this earlier in our conversation about how when your leader comes to you and says, what can I work on? It almost feels like a trick question. What are you trying to do here? I like my paychecks. I don't want those to become affected. So I don't know about this. And I remember, when you did ask this, it first came in an email and I'm thinking, I'm just going to pretend like I didn't see that email and see what happens. And all this, because I mean, there's this belief I have that the leader above you is fairly good at what they're doing, and any work that needs to be done wouldn't be from them or in service of what they're trying to do, because they're the leader. They already are there. If you look at a structural hierarchy, like that's what it's there for. So that's a kind of a belief that I have to shed a little bit too. But I remember when you asked the question, before I could give you an answer, I talked to you and I said, all right, well, actually you might've asked me, where's your response to this email? Because I was intentionally putting it off, but we had the conversation and I said, I have to be honest that me opening up about what my boss, what my leader needs to get better at is kind of triggering. Why would that not be? And we really talked through it, and you said something that really hit me and kind of changed my perspective on it. And I remember your response was, Jared, if you don't tell me, we can't make our relationship stronger. This will make us stronger. This will be something that I need to know, like any relationship, that when you can share how the other can help you improve, well, it may be tough to share. In the end, you're so much more power, like just change from it. And I remember you said that. And I remember you worded it as a, please do this for me, but do it for us. Do it for what we have as a working relationship here. Like it will strengthen what we have if we do it. And so I took my kind of ego and pride away and I said, okay, I'll be honest based on some observations I had. Another lesson that I learned from a colleague we've mentioned a lot on this call already, but that if you share observations back with somebody, there's nothing wrong with that because it's an observation. It wasn't wrong. It's what you observed. Mm-hmm. And so I did that and I wrote back to you, and it took me quite a while to write the email. And of course I was sweating some bullets when I sent it. But then we talked and you were very grateful for it. And the response was exactly what I needed. So I apologize. This answer is so long, but it was a really pivotal moment, I think, for the both of us, to have that experience. And then, to have you say, thank you, like not just thank you, but like, this is going to help me more than maybe 17, 14, 18, 19 compliments. Like that's really great, but this is what's really going to be in service of me and for us working together. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you, because I know that, you know, again, that idea of collective development, being able, I mean, you potentially took a risk that like that could backfire, or that I could think less of you if mm-hmm. you had something, you know, it really wasn't even negative. It was just observations and what you'd like to see more of. And then the fun part has been for me when I make small progress, it's fun to send you a message and saying, hey, just want to let you know, like, here's what I've been doing. And it may not seem like a big thing, but it's progress in the right direction. And so it is pretty cool to be able to celebrate those things with each other and know that it's a way of me being accountable to you too, that I am getting better at that, or I'm intentionally working on it. So
yeah, cool to see. I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks for sharing that. All right, we can go back to rapid
fire. Okay. Look how you avoided the rapid fire.
And I even know what they are. And
I know, right? I'm trying to pretend like you don't know what these are. And here's my acting skills working, ladies and gentlemen. Not very good right now. All right, Heather, with the questions you already know, let me rapid fire these two of you. So fill in the blank. Leadership is?
It's a practice you have to work at every day.
Who is a leader you admire and why?
Oh, for sure. I've already talked about her, but PJ Anderson, she retired last year from Herman Miller, and I admire her for several reasons. I saw her use her voice in powerful ways. I saw her speak truth to power, and that is always inspirational. She's small but mighty, and I will never be able to repay her for stretching me in the ways that she did and preparing me for what was ahead, even though I couldn't always see that for myself. But I am eternally, eternally grateful to her.
And she also makes a really good margarita.
She does make a good margarita. That's yep. Like probably one of her best characteristics.
Yeah, right up there with everything else you said, the margarita making for sure. What are you reading right now?
Oh, that's not a fair question. I'll be honest with you. So with my team, we are currently reading Mastering Leadership. Bill Adams was one of our guests. And so we're almost through that book as a team. So I'm rereading it again for like the fifth time. Two books that I'm reading. One is The Deadline Effect by Christopher Cox. And its subtitle is How to Work Like It's the Last Minute Before It's the Last Minute. Because I've always been somebody who works much more productively under a deadline. I'm not sure the book's helping me that much, to be honest. And then one of our last guests, Robin Hills, recommended The Hidden Spring. So I picked that one up, but it's so deep. I can only read like 3 or 4 pages at a time. And then I have to stop and process. So that one's going really slow. And then the one that I just finished is An Everyone Culture by Robert Keegan. And that is what's really like reinforced my desire to help us become a developmental organization. So sorry, awesome. 4 books. I read all the time.
4 books, I tell you. Okay. Yeah, I guess my one book right now is, I'm trying to compare myself already. My one book isn't good enough. No, I will not read 4 books at a time, but I'm happy that you're doing that, Heather. Thanks for showing us.
I just now, like, I consider learning an extreme sport. I can't help myself. I really can't learn enough. It's a little obsessive compulsive, to be honest.
Well, and at the time of this recording, the Olympics is happening right now. So I'll put in a memo to the Olympic committee to add extreme reading as a sport.
Compete there.
Good. I'm glad to hear that for you. Now, let me ask the last question here. What do you love about your work?
I love pouring into people. I love seeing people. I love seeing their potential unlocked. I love seeing them doing more than they thought they could. I love seeing them reach their goals. And if I can just play one small part in helping them be able to see that for themselves, like, that's the best for me. That's legacy work. And it's passing along the legacy that was passed on to me, and it's leaving something behind in the world that really made an impact. Awesome. Hands down.
Thanks for sharing. Well, Heather, this has been a pleasure, seriously, to be on this side, asking you the questions, hearing some of your background and hearing some fun stories along the way, is a treat. And it really was a treat. So thank you for letting me do this. I feel like I need to like get out of my virtual chair and shift into the other chair so I can put you back in the pilot seat.
All right, I'll take over. I'll take over to close this out today. Thank you. This was really fun, though, to be on the other side. And I have a little more empathy for my guest now. It's a little nerve-wracking wondering what question you're going to come up with. So
you would never have known you were nervous.
Yeah, that was fun. All right. Well, remember, everyone deserves to have a great leader. So keep working at being the best leader you can be. Until next time.
This podcast is an original production of Global Talent Management at Herman Miller Group. It's hosted by me, Heather Esposito, and produced in music by Sean Beck.